Like everyone else, we've been searching for some solace in this time of war, and Strangechamps found a bit of comfort in an unlikely place, the poetry of a 13th century Sufi mystic. In recent years, Rumi has become one of the best-selling poets in America, thanks largely to the translations of Coleman Barks. Today, Rumi's own history seems especially pertinent. A Muslim, born in Afghanistan, he celebrated the underlying unity of all religions. He also had a gift for writing about great sorrow, as Coleman Barks shows with this poem.
Stay together, friends. Don't scatter and sleep. Our friendship is made of being awake. The water wheel accepts water and turns and gives it away, weeping. That way it stays in the garden. Whereas another roundness rolls through a dry riverbed, looking for what it thinks it wants. Stay here, quivering with each moment, like a drop of mercury.
That's very beautiful.
Well, he does attend to the health of the communal soul. And by community, he means the whole planet. He doesn't divide us up into nations and churches. He said this in the 13th century. It's astonishing, really, with the Crusades going back and forth across his country and with the Mongol armies coming through. That he said, if you think there's an important difference between Muslim and Christian and Jew and Hindu, if you think those are important divisions, then you're making another division between your heart, what you love with, and how you act in the world. That is such a radical thing to say now. Mm-hmm. But 7 centuries ago, he said it with such authority and with such gentleness.
How was it received 7 centuries ago? What did the religious leaders of his time think of him?
They did not kill him. And that's saying something, I guess. All religions, members of every religion, came to his funeral. You know, there's a story, it may be legend, but it's a persistent legend, that when Genghis Khan and his armies came down and got almost to Konya, Turkey, where Rumi lived, he walked out alone to meet the armies, and he talked with the generals, and they said, we must spare this town, Konya, because there might be other people in it, like this one.
Has Rumi stayed popular through the centuries and well-known through the centuries?
In the Middle East, he has been, but not until 20 years ago did he begin to become popular in the Western world.
I've read that he is the best-selling poet in America today, which I find...
I'm not sure if that's true or not. It seems like it might be. The translations that I have worked on have sold 500,000 copies, which is astonishing in the world of poetry.
How do you explain that? What is it about Rumi that obviously speaks so powerfully to Americans in particular today?
There's a theory that Christianity expunged the ecstatic material in the 3rd century in the Council of Nicaea from the canon, from the New Testament. And it may be that Rumi is filling that need of the West for ecstatic vision. Hmm. And he seems to say it with some authenticity.
Tell us something about Rumi. Who was he? Where did he come from?
Well, he came from Afghanistan. He lived on the eastern edge of the Persian Empire. He was born September 30th, 1207, in a town named Balkh, B-A-L-K-H, in Afghanistan. And when he was a young boy, the Mongol armies were coming through, and his family fled to Damascus and later to Konya, Turkey, where he became, as his father was, the head of a dervish learning community. The purpose of that community was to open the heart and to explore the mystery of what they called union. But the main galvanizing event in his life was when he met his teacher, Shams of Tabriz, in an October afternoon of 1244. There are many stories of that meeting.
Tell me.
Well, Rumi was talking evidently with a group of students, and he was reading from his father's spiritual diary, the Maharif. And Shams came along and pushed his books into the fountain. And Shams says, "Now you must live what you've been reading about." And Rumi says, "But those books, they're so vibe." He says, "We can get them out and dry them off, and you can go on reading them." And he pulled one out, and it was dry. Or he says, "You can begin to really open your heart and live what your father has been talking about." And so he and Shams went into a kind of a retreat together, into what they call sobet, or mystical conversation on mystical subjects. The poetry came out of that friendship.
Through his love for his friend, he sort of fell into the divine, into a state that is nothing but love. Is there one you could read to give us a sense of how Rumi himself described this?
Well, this is one of the ones that's very difficult to understand, but I'm going to read it anyway. "Not Christian or Jew or Muslim, not Hindu, Buddhist, Sufi, or Zen, not any religion or cultural system, I am not from the East or the West. Not out of the ocean or up from the ground, not natural or ethereal, not composed of elements at all. I do not exist, am not an entity in this world or the next. Did not descend from Adam and Eve or any origin story. My place is the placeless, a trace of the traceless, neither body or soul. I belong to the beloved. Have seen the two worlds as one, and that one call to and know first, last, outer, inner, only that breath, breathing, human being."
He sort of says two things. He says, we're not who we think we are. We are not this body, this life. Our real life is the life of the soul, the spirit, it's elsewhere. But he says, we are our breath. We are human.
Mm-hmm.
How can we be both?
I don't know. Yes, he says many ambiguous mysteries. And he does love this world. That's what I love about Rumi. He caresses it. He's very tender toward existence. He is not a renunciate. And yet he says, this is not my hometown. I'm from somewhere else. Someone asked him once why he talked so much about silence. And he said, the radiant one inside me has never said a word. So he was full of words and also silence.
He talks a lot in his poetry about dying, about grief. Hmm. There's a lot of language of annihilation.
Right.
He uses images of flames appear often. Mm-hmm. There's an entire poem about coming to the place of execution. What do you make of all of that?
Well, the oldest image maybe is the moth and the candle. He says, judge a moth by the beauty of its candle, or by what it dies into. He says, there's a shredding that's really a healing that makes you more alive. There's some kind of annihilation. He calls it fana. That is absolute. The dying before you die, that all religions have some version of.
In that sense, he sort of welcomes grief. You know, the other line that stayed with me this week is, I think he says, the cure for pain is in the pain.
Right. There is some great possibility.
Is there one more poem you would read for us? One more that we can think about?
Learn the alchemy true human beings know. The moment you accept what troubles you've been given, the door will open. Welcome difficulty as a familiar comrade. Joke with torment brought by the friend. Sorrows are the rags of old clothes and jackets that serve to cover, then are taken off. That undressing and the naked body underneath is the sweetness that comes after grief.
Poet Coleman Barks has translated and edited several collections of Rumi's poetry, including The Soul of Rumi and Rumi, the Book of Love. He spoke with Anne Strangechamps. For another taste of Rumi's words, here is Iran's Dastan Ensemble.
می‌رود او در پیرهنم ای داد یار یار یار
It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Jim Fleming.